Listening to ESPN 100.3 FM, KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Check it out, y'all. Hola, amigos. It is the 17th of May. Welcome to the Sports Hangover. I'm Gus Kattengill. Looking forward to your contributions today. We'll focus a lot on college baseball as the final series of the regular season for a lot of the teams begin today. We'll focus on LSU and Auburn. The voice of your LSU Fighting Tigers, Chris Blair, at 12:30 will be joining us. At 1:05, Matt Reiser, head coach of the Southeastern Lions. He will be joining us then to talk about the Lions' postseason chances. D1 Baseball came out earlier this week with their projections, last in, last out, where the regionals are, the top seeds. We'll kind of go through that a little bit here in a little bit. The Lions are not in there. Only Sam Houston State out of the Southland Conference are in there right now, and they're in first place. The Lions are in second place. What do they have to do? Well, hosting 20th-ranked Houston for two games in Hammond is a key area and a way for them to maybe get in there. So we'll talk to Coach about what they have to do in order to get to postseason action. Bryant Johnson's going to give the Colonels take, and also we'll talk a little bit more from the Southland as well, because UNO is playing pretty good baseball. Manny Pepis, their play-by-play, is going to talk to us at 1:30. And in Brian Johnson, voice of the Colonels, at 1:45, as Nichols has their final series over in Thibodaux. They'll be hosting Central Arkansas. UNO has won a couple of games in a row here, doing very well as of late, including beating my Southern Miskolcin Eagles back on Tuesday. So we'll discuss what's going on there, and Tulane's at UCF to start their series 5:30 Central Time as well. In the third hour at 2:05, Joe Christofek, as of course the second crown of the second jewel of the Triple Crown, will be run this weekend on Saturday as the Preakness. So he will give us a breakdown there. Kind of briefly talked with Charlie yesterday a little bit about it after the show. And is it disappointing? There's only eight horses there. Is it? Lone Sailor, the Benson's horse, one of the eight that's going to be there. So Joe will break it down and let us know, is there a chance for a Triple Crown or not? Only eight horses right now scheduled to be going on Saturday. And then, of course, at 2:30, Coach Kenny Farrell and the Jesters segment coming up at 2:30. We'll talk a little soccer, a little football there as well. 800-998-1003 is the way to get in touch with us via the telephone lines, 800-998-1003. If you want to tweet at us, is at ESPN Radio Nolan. You can also follow me personally at GCATS_17. And we're going to have an interesting conversation, obviously, in the next two segments here before we get to Chris Blair and preview LSU and Auburn in the Battle of Tigers that begin later today. The NBA is a fun game to kind of not only watch, but just to kind of watch the coverage of, right? We had a lot of fun this week about LeBron. And, you know, again, based off of the question that always happens when he hits a game-winning shot or he plays well, is he past Jordan? And we touched on, has there and is there another question that's sort of like that in any really other sports? Now, some people told me back on early in the week, baseball could be one, right? Who's the greatest of all time? Who's the best hitter, home run hitter, things of that nature? I just don't know if it's as emotional. That could be wrong. Again, you know, feel free to throw them our way. Because I asked, is there another question, who's better, Jordan or LeBron, that gets so many people, like, worked up? In football, I threw that out there earlier in the week. I don't know if there's one in football. I mean, other than who's the best quarterback, Montana and Brady, but does that get people so riled up? Like, non 49er, non-Patriots fans, do you get riled up? Does that make sense? In soccer, it's Messi and it's Ronaldo. They absolutely get emotional about it. People have their favorite, and we'll give you reasons why. But I'm just trying to think, you know? I mean, if there's anything like that. But it's just kind of fun just to sort of watch, right? Especially, this is what happens when you have days in between game two and game three of the Eastern Conference Finals. You gotta wait till Saturday, till game three in Cleveland. I mean, they've been given 3 days off since game number two. So naturally, what do you think? What do you think is the topic that happens, especially when LeBron and the Cavaliers are now down 0-2? What could you possibly think is the topic for the next couple of days? And it's something, again, we're kind of going back and forth, you know, can he do it? Can he not? Is the team good enough? What have you? But yes, yes, you have to bring in former GMs like David Griffin on ESPN, former Cavs GM. And you're not asking him specifically about just the series, right? No, no, no. You have to ask, is LeBron going to leave Cleveland?
I don't at all think he's decided. I think he's so consumed with being the best basketball player on the planet, and he's so consumed with winning games in the here and now. I don't think he puts a lot of thought process into what comes next. We all do, and I think that's from a media perspective, it's certainly something where everybody thinks this is a foregone conclusion, and I just don't think it's even really been something he's spent a great deal of time on.
I mean, it's crazy. Right? I mean, hey, that's a topic. That's a storyline. The series isn't even over yet. They can still come back and win, go to the finals, what have you. And then you're watching this morning on First Take, and even last night, there was people discussing it on the network. You know, going back and forth on, well, does he want to get to the finals and then lose so he can keep his perfect record? He doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to have another loss in the finals. He doesn't want to have a loss in the conference finals. Like, it's just nuts. All this assumption and what they're going in. And I'm listening this morning and walking the dog this morning, and Golic and Wingo obviously gets things started here on ESPN New Orleans, and have Stu Gotts on. And you just heard Stu Gotts on with the Dan Le Batard Show. And it's one of the things that Brian and I had fun with on Tuesday, right? Right? I mean, one of the questions that people always have with LeBron, I mean, it's the effort. You know, you could almost see, and you saw the Cavs in the fourth quarter in game two just quit. I mean, I played the sound bites yesterday, you know, from a lot of the analysts saying you could just see a little quit in them. I'm talking about the team. But yeah, look, it always winds up going with LeBron. Again, I'm having a little fun in poking at how some of the coverage is on this. And I've always said, I mean, if you're, I can't think of another player in another sport that is covered the way LeBron is. When the team wins or he hits a shot, jumper, three, dunk, it's the greatest they've ever seen. Never happened. You've never seen anything like it. If he misses a shot, a jumper, a free throw, he chokes. If the Cavs don't win, the team's not good enough. He can't do it alone. There is no winning in any situation on that. And there's overreaction on both sides all the time. It's crazy. But this is Stu Gotts this morning bringing up the LeBron effort.
U.S. Cavalier fans, if they felt like LeBron James was giving max effort, that final game at Boston, when he took his jersey off as he was leaving the court and then decided to come down to Miami. And then you ask Heat fans, if you feel like he was giving max effort in that Spurs final the last year in Miami, ask them, because those are the conversations that fans had.
Oh, yeah. They were just having a blast on that. And then, of course, Golic and Wingo defending the fact that that shouldn't even be a question, that LeBron always gives max effort and energy. And you heard us, Jordan, on Tuesday. Right? Brian and Ola East and I having a little fun going back and forth and, you know, yelling and all that. Okay, it doesn't just happen here. Listen.
The fact that we have conversations and we look at the body language and we look at how he plays defense and we question whether or not he's going to stay in Cleveland while he's currently playing in an Eastern Conference final for the Cavaliers. The fact that you have to question his effort three or four separate times in his career as to whether or not he's actually tanking games. I mean, that's the difference between Jordan and LeBron James. It really is.
I completely, disagree with that. Nobody on this show is questioning his effort. That's not us. We're not doing that.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay. Whoa, whoa. Very defensive there.
I'm just telling you, dude. Right? I mean, I have fun with this because it is. It just, I can't think of another athlete. I really honestly, not, not even Tiger Woods, because for the most part, when Tiger was winning, people liked him or hated him or maybe won too much and stuff, but it wasn't, I don't know if it was this device. It was just nuts. But it's true. Look, what Stukas was trying to get across to Troy Wingo, who I think kind of didn't understand what he was saying, is that's never been a question for a guy like a Jordan. No one ever questioned, ever, that he didn't ever try his hardest on certain things. Or trying to orchestrate an exit. And again, different times I understand. And different situations, I get it. But what Stu was saying there is a very interesting point. At least again, now I said it's a different age. I mean, I had a little fun with Jordan saying he was born the final year of Jordan winning a championship in the second of a three-peat in 98. He was born there. So he never saw them play. So we never covered sports, I guess, the way we did. I mean, I don't think even in that era you dare have really writers be as vocal as they are now. I mean, guys like Screaming A. This guy's trash. This guy's terrible. J.R. Smith put out an APB. I don't really think people talked like that back then. I could be wrong, but you have more avenues, more venues, and more different things that people can now talk about it. So that's LeBron factor. I mean, again, you're just seeing it, especially now you have 3 days off until Eastern Conference Finals game number three. It's funny. It's funny to watch that, you know, I'm not saying they're creating or, but again, this topics, right? Does he not want to go to a finals because there's no way he can beat the team in the West, so he doesn't want another blemish on his record? I mean, it's nuts when you think about it. And then here we go. Just 2 days ago, Jordan, if you remember, 2 days ago, Golden State, unstoppable. They'll never lose. Maybe once to Houston, but it's done. It's over. Give them the championship. Give them the trophy. We saw what happened in game one. Houston, they're a joke, right? I mean, they're D'Antoni, isolation ball, Chris Paul, waste of a, just everything. Golden State's unstoppable. Just, I mean, watch them. And then they lose yesterday, 127-105, and the overreaction starts. Screaming A.
Golden State should be worried because you got to get some production. Draymond Green and Klay Thompson can't combine for 14 points, and you can expect the Golden State Warriors to win. That can't happen. Steph Curry can't shoot 1 of 8 from three-point range, and you're going to beat the Houston Rockets. That's not going to happen. Kevin Durant can't be the only dude that shows up offensively. He drops 38. He hits 13-22 from the field. But you need production from all of those guys, because when that doesn't happen, what ends up happening is that Golden State mirrored what you saw from Houston in game one. You have one offensive player playing isolation basketball. They're not doing much of anything else because they couldn't rely on anybody else.
Losing interest.
Let me tell you something. I have
National Solitaire Day.
No idea at all.
Tend to be productive at the
you know,
really?
What it is that I am listening to anymore. I almost feel like sometimes when I watch sports, it's almost to the point now where, like, I do every now and then we'll put it on for like 5 minutes. Have a little fun, Jordan, right? To try to get a little culture, little news, just see what's going on. And I honestly do. I do it for fun now, right? When we sit down for dinner, because it ain't till like 8:30, you know, after you put down the little guy. And I'll put on CNN for 5 minutes, and we almost joke and bet before the channel switches. Is it Stormy? Is it Trump's, you know, loves Rush? I mean, what is it? And we put on Fox, and it's always like the Hannity show around that hour. And what do they say? It's just funny. I don't know what is news now or what really, how do you cover sports? Because apparently, per Ramona Shelbourne and Marcus Thompson on ESPN last night, Steph Curry is either not healthy or healthy. Ramona Shelbourne.
He didn't look right. He doesn't have that same bounce to his stuff. I mean, some of that is that he's playing a lot on defense. They're really targeting him.
Yeah.
And he's got to do a lot of work on that side of the ball. Maybe he gets tired just in that role. But that's happened before. Teams always try to do that to Steph Curry. It reminds me a little of the year when he had his knee injury in 2016, when we couldn't quite put our finger on it, but it just didn't look like him. It just, like, and he wouldn't say anything, and nobody would really quite, you know, diagnose any kind of injury, but he just doesn't have the same burst and the same deafness. I don't know if you want to put it that way, but that bounce that he normally has. So I think there's something a little wrong. We saw him in game one. He was stretching it out afterwards. He's not really going to say, but he doesn't look like the same Steph Curry.
All right. So now Marcus Thompson on ESPN of The Athletic, right? He That's a completely different take.
He's fine. I mean, he's not like, you know, 1,000%, but his knee isn't bothering him. I think it's more conditioning than it is, like, knee limitations.
Mm-hmm.
Last time we went through this in 2016, and, you know, I looked him in the eye, and I'm like, Steph, are you hurt? And he's like, I'm fine. But I could tell it wasn't the truth, right? Like, I could tell he's just like, nothing's wrong with me. You know, if I'm out there, I can play. You know, they give you that speech. As long as I'm on the court, I can play, blah, blah. This time when I asked him, like, he's like, no, I'm fine. Like, I'm good. And it's just a different, like, last time he was being a tough guy. This time he's like, no, I'm fine. You know, all I just need is some more time and I'm good. So I don't really think that's the problem this time around.
Okay. So can anybody tell me what's what, right? I mean, just a couple of days ago, the Warriors are never going to lose. And now they're in trouble. Is Steph fine? He's fine. Ramona, no, he's not. It is funny, right? How it's covered. I mean, again, I get it. You have a multiple of networks, and it's not just ESPN, it's everybody. You have websites, you have Twitters, you have Facebooks, you have all kinds of people chiming in and doing it. It's just, I wanted to start out today and just have a little fun and just kind of, you know, just give you a little snapshot of what it is now. You know, you got 3 days before the next Eastern Conference Finals game. Where's LeBron going? Is he purposely trying to lose the Eastern Conference Finals just so he won't lose in the finals and have a blemish on his record? I mean, right? I just thought you'd enjoy just hearing. Because, it really is. It's starting to get like politics. I don't know what's what. All I know is that there's two sides wanting me to believe something and telling me something that they want to tell you. It really is. It's interesting. What I do know is what I'm going to tell you next out of the break. And that's a good thing, especially if you're a Pelicans fan. Hour one is brought to you by the King Firm. Don't play the game of claims with insurance companies. If you've been injured in an accident, ring the King. 504-909-KING. Go to the website, kinginjuryfirm.com. It's all laid out there, right? Simple for you. They got videos of certain cases or, things that maybe might be happening to you, so you can kind of get an idea. Should you call them or not? First off, it's free consultation. So when you ring the King, talk to them. They'll answer your questions. If you have any, they'll tell you, yeah, we're good for you, or no, maybe you need to go somewhere else or use a different type of law. You don't have a case or what have you. So it's a free consultation. They specify in personal injury, maritime offshore, mass tort, workers' comp as well. It's the King Firm. Ring them, 909-KING. We'll be back. You're listening to the Sports Hangover. Hour one just underway. Chris Blair, bottom of the hour, the voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers on ESPN New Orleans. One in a best of seven series, can you win the series in three games?
No.
Oh, I don't know about that, because the question asked to Chris Paul last night after the win is, game three a must win?
I don't know. Ain't that what they always say in these series? I'm serious, man. If you lose game one, what everybody else, it's a must win. So we don't mind the road. You know what I mean? It is what it is. I mean, I don't know. We wanted to win game two. You know what I mean? Regardless, I mean, it would have been 0-2, but we wanted to win game two. We wanted go to game three.
Jordan, must win. I mean, bet you didn't know that. No, Warriors in three.
Never knew that was possible.
Four or whatever. You have to laugh sometimes how it's covered. You really do. You really honestly do. You just have to. So I said going into the break, before we went into the break, there's one thing I do know. I do know Anthony Davis is a good basketball player. That is true. One of the reasons, obviously, we see game in and game out, we follow it, and we're pretty understanding of just how good he is. Well, I tell you what, it's a nice bit of recognition. The NBA awards. I kind of like this. Do you like this? The fact that the league now has like their award show to give out their awards instead of doing it at the beginning of the season or something like that. They have an award show now on TNT, and they give, you know, there's three finalists to all kinds of things. Coach of the year, offensive player, rookie of the year, MVP. And it's kind of like an Oscars and a TV show. I like it. I dig it. I think it's great. But congratulations. Congratulations to Anthony Davis. That's right. Named a finalist to the MVP award. So he's legitimately an MVP candidate. And it's not just the only thing that he's nominated for. He's the only player, by the way, nominated for two different awards. He's a finalist for the Defensive Player of the Year. You have Davis, Joel Embiid of the 76ers, and Rudy Gobert of the Jazz. Again, right there, just stop. That's awesome. That's what we were saying this week, what we were talking about, and Jordan's going to give us a quick update here in a second on more social media fun that Boogie Cousins is having this week. But we were talking about that yesterday, right? Big deal or not a big deal that DeMarcus Cousins is unfollowing. And in all the conversation we're talking about, do you bring back DeMarcus Cousins at all costs? Do you bring back Boogie at the right cost? I'm in the camp of at the right cost, right? There's a lot of you out there that are going at all costs, bring him back. But my point that I said more than anything is, keep in mind, to me, the most important player on this franchise is Anthony Davis. And I know a lot of y'all will say, well, you got to keep him happy. Listen to some of those bites, and I can play those again later this week. Maybe we'll do that a little bit tomorrow or later today. Of those bites in which he talked about during the Portland series and even during Golden State, he loved the way this team was, the chemistry and everything. And more importantly, he used the word that he was convinced. That the home court at SKC during the Blazers would convince DeMarcus to come back and stuff. I think at the end of the day, he understands business, he understands basketball, and he understands, more importantly, he wants to win. That's the most important thing to him. And as I said, I think it's the right decision and a smart decision to, yes, try to add as much talent as possible and the potential to bring back a guy, and I say potential because I don't think we all know how he's going to recover from an Achilles tear. It's not an MCL, ACL. It's not a sprained or broken ankle. It's not an arm or a shoulder. It's an Achilles. And one of the best players to have ever played the game, Kobe Bryant, was not the same afterwards. And he was substantially less weight-wise. Now, again, different game. He relied on explosiveness and jump shots. Can Boogie try down and go do that? But again, does that mean you have to slow up your pace of offense? You see what I'm getting at? There's a lot of questions into this. So it makes sense for the organization to go maybe 2-3 years, that 30-year player option. That's what I think a lot of people feel is the right way to go. And then you add the social media fun that he's having in following, not following. Jordan, the latest on that?
Well, he followed the Lakers, and then he followed Paul George.
Right.
And he followed the point guard for the Lakers.
There you go.
Isaiah Thomas.
And a lot of people feel that Paul George is going to go to L.A. He's been rumored to want to go there. It is what it is. But, again, that's neither here or there. My point is, we talked yesterday in this conversation that Anthony Davis is the key here. I mean, he is the key player. We saw it, right? And I wasn't being ugly, but facts are facts. Again, we can talk about which team was better. Which we can. I know. Look, Pels lost to the Kings without DeMarcus, with DeMarcus on their team. But DeMarcus Cousins never went to the playoffs on his own. I get it. Anthony Davis only did it once. But I would take AD, right? I don't think we all would say that. So, look, I just think the fact that he's being recognized that way, because let's be honest, and look, you could say that about anybody on the candidate list here or in the final three. But, yeah, where would the Cavs be without LeBron? Clearly. I mean, right? I mean, the guy dropped 40-plus points in Game 2 against Boston, and they lost. Where would Houston be without James Harden? That's a tough one. I think Chris Paul's pretty good. They got a lot of shooting and a lot of talent on that team. I still think they're a playoff team. Am I wrong on that? Is Houston a playoff team without James Harden? I think they are. Is the Cavaliers a playoff team without LeBron James? Not a shot. I honestly think not a shot. If Kevin Love's your only, I mean, him and Korver, am I wrong on that?
Would it be still
like Kyrie? No, I'm talking about the Cavs this year. You're not saying Kyrie because Kyrie's not on this year. He's an MVP candidate this year, LeBron. We're not talking last year. And I think we know the answer if Anthony Davis is not on his team what's happening. Remember when he missed a game or two? I was there when they were trying to win 11 straight. Oh, that was bad. That was bad. I was at the Smoothie King Center right after they won 10 straight, and then that Friday they come home after the road trip. Things are going well, and then and AD wasn't there. No, it doesn't make sense. It had nothing to do with me. Not Anthony Davis. Oh, no Anthony Davis on the court. It had everything to do with it. It wasn't me being in the arena. No. Stop it. I cried for 2 hours. It was terrible. You finally had a sellout crowd, and then there's no AD, and woo. The Wizards came in and beat that tail. but that's my point, though. I mean, yeah. So anyway, super congrats. And look, I love the fact that he's a Defensive Player of the Year candidate as well. He is a finalist. So we'll say finalist, not a candidate. He's a finalist. He's also a finalist for the MVP awards. First time he's been given that honor. And I think, you know, again, I want to say it's only the second year they're doing the awards sort of like this, to where they say, here are your final three. He's not going to win it. You could make a case. And I think that's awesome. That tells you, though, his game's gotten better. But I think we all agree, Harden, James, there's a different level. And I played that Tim Legler bite a while back, right, of him saying, look, there's certain players at the highest level. They take their game up another level from the regular season to the postseason. And then in the postseason, when you get deep into the postseason, it goes up another level. And I think AD's going to learn from that going into the semifinals this year. Coach of the Year, your three finalists, Dwayne Casey, Toronto, who got fired. Quinn Snyder of the Jazz, Brad Stevens of the Celtics. Most Improved Player, Clint Capella of the Rockets, Spencer Dinwiddie of the Brooklyn Nets, and Victor Oladipo, Pacers. I think you got to go with the Pacers, Oladipo there. Sixth Man of the Year, there he is again. Just chill, Aaron Gordon, trying to win it for a second straight year. Lou Williams, L.A. Clippers, Fred Van Vliet of the Raptors as well. So those are some of the other awards in which there are finalists there. Looking forward to it. So, hey, again, solid effort by AD this season, and he at least is going to be recognized. He'll be there at the awards ceremonies, and, you know, we'll see. June 25th is when it will be televised in L.A., so we'll have two awards that he'll be up for. I think those are really two good awards to be up for. And it just shows where that trajectory of his career is going. Quick break. When we come back, Chris Blair, the voice of your LSU Fighting Tigers, will preview tonight's game one of the season-ending series for the Tigers, as in LSU and Auburn. We'll do that next, as Hour 1 is brought to you by the King Firm on ESPN New Orleans. Why certain things matter so much, but Jordan next to me here in the computer has pulled up an article on CBSSports.com. Storylines and things to look out in 2018. Watch out for a Matt Ryan bounce back big Falcons year. Thanks. I was trying to be in a good place when we talked with Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers, and that's when you chose to pull that up. Thank you for that, intern. Chris Blair joins us, voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers. Rivalries, Chris, you know all about that, don't you?
What do I know all about?
Exactly, rivalries. It's as close to a college rivalry, Saints-Falcons, as I can think of in pros, man. How you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing well, and you're exactly right. I spent 10 years in Georgia. They consider it a massive rivalry and really the only game that they pay attention to. I mean, they like to win as many as possible, but that's really the only two they circle. And likewise, since living in Louisiana, I get the vibe it's very similar here. So, yeah, so that question, probably one of the closer in the pros to a college-type rivalry.
Yeah, I've mentioned it already. You know him very well as well, Todd Graffinini, voice of the Green Wave and ridiculous diehard Saints fan. When the schedule came out, Chris, he already said Thanksgiving night was ruined for him because it's Saints Falcons on Thanksgiving night. And it was April, the day that the schedule came out. So it kind of gives you an idea. Look, in college baseball, there's rivalries here as well, but it's been a different LSU season, hasn't it? In terms of here are the Tigers going into the final regular season series and it's battling just to get into postseason play, you know, this week could have likely been maybe the last home game at Alex Box Stadium, which is way too early in May for that to happen. It's been an interesting year to cover.
I think I would agree with that. I mean, first of all, you came into the year with 17 new members to a team that, you know, had made it to Omaha to the championship series. You know, again, typically at LSU, I think more times than not, since going back to Skip Urban days, LSU simply reloads, they don't rebuild. So I didn't look at it as a rebuild year, but there are new members to this team. Now, on top of that, start the season and you lose Josh Smith after the first series against Notre Dame. And then you've had, you know, Brant Broussard out for 13 games. You know, you've had just so many injuries to the staff, the guys that you certainly were counting on, members of that 17 new group that just haven't been able to get back to full health. So I think when you combine that all together, I don't know that it's so surprising. I know it's disappointing, but I don't know if it's so surprising when you consider the way things have gone.
Speak with Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers, at LSU Tigers Voice, the way to follow him over on Twitter. LSU's 1-6-7. You know, I wanted to ask you this because it's an interesting aspect of it. When you do what you do, you get a chance, obviously, to not only call the games, but host coaches' shows. And it's a lot of conversations on travel that you get to have with coaches and players, but also during that show as well. How do you think the job that Paul's done this year and really how he's handled it, in that it is a difficult situation? It's one thing to try to find the team, try to push the right buttons, use the right players a certain time in a game, which is, you know, the difficult yet the task that a manager in baseball has in the major league level and the coach in college level. But to do that with the injuries that you're talking about and the expectation levels that LSU has, just your point of view from talking with him throughout the season, I think he's handled it.
Oh, I think so. I mean, you know, he's a college Hall of Fame coach for that reason. And, you know, after spending the first two seasons with him, one of the things I used to compare it to was like a pilot or even a rocket ship captain, in the sense that as the season's going, you're starting to the destination, and it's about the destination with him, and that is obviously Omaha. That's where the standard is at LSU. So that's the destination. You have to understand that right out of the gate. Now, along the travel, whether you're going through the Milky Way or across the country, whatever analogy you want to use, sometimes you have to push different buttons, pull different levers, and there's nobody really better in the business than doing that. I mean, just look at what he's done in all of the seasons here. I mean, guys switching positions and coming out and finding out that maybe they're going to be All-Americans at that spot, or changing guys in the bullpen to be middle inning or closers or even starters. I mean, his career is filled with just his ability to do that. Coming to 2018, now imagine yourself trying to get to the moon, and as you're looking to pull a lever or push a button, there are no more buttons or levers. And that's kind of the way it's been this year for LSU. I can remember a trip to College Station early in the SEC where I think we had two position players that were in the dugout. I mean, you get to the third, fourth inning, need to make a change. Or unfortunately an injury makes you make a change. I mean, you're down to fewer options. So I think when you take, again, in totality, the way this team coming into last weekend with still some things on the table, a lot of big things on the table, and still the ability to control their own destiny from finishing the SEC, where they finish in the SEC West, where they're seated in Hoover, and what they may do in Hoover, and who knows what will happen in the NCAA. The fact that they still have that opportunity based with all the trouble they've had to deal with, yeah, I think it's a pretty good coaching job and a pretty good job by this team not to get discouraged. And I think that's why you have to be a little positive if you're a Tiger fan, that regardless of who you were playing this weekend, the fact that your team has a chance to really make something happen, this group of guys have really fought hard this year, stayed in there, and kept battling. So I don't expect anything different beginning tonight.
Chris Blair, voice of the Tigers, joining us. Two final things for you. We'll wrap up with you previewing this weekend series. But what's crazy about it, Chris, is the Tigers are looking for their first SEC road series win of the season. And that's just, man, you know, it's crazy that you still have some of those options that you just mentioned there on the road. What's been the trouble, you think, for LSU on the road this year?
Well, firstly, as you said just a moment ago, it's been an interesting year. I think you can put that in quotations.
Right.
This is a team that has won every series at home in 2018, which is the first time that's been done since 2003, which that alone is mind-boggling when you consider the talent, the coaches, obviously, with Coach Burtman and Smoke and obviously Coach Manero. You look at all those teams and what they did in postseason play since 2003, and you realize none of those teams won all of their home series in the SEC. on the flip side of that, they've yet to win one, as you pointed out. And that's the interesting dichotomy of 2018 for this squad, I think. But to answer your direct question, I hear it all the time. You know, LSU really put college baseball on the map, certainly put baseball on the map in the state of Louisiana and for LSU and the SEC. But now I think you're starting to see, because of their success, because of the investment, because of the crowd, because of the facilities, I go to all these places across the SEC, and there's no place like Alec Box. I mean, that's number one, and I truly mean that. But the pieces that make Alec Box so effective and have, you know, allowed them to win as many games as they have, especially at home, you're starting to see everybody in the league from about 10, 15 years ago finally getting in gear saying that's what we have to do. If you want to be LSU year in, year out, these are the commitments that have to be made, and everybody's done it. I mean, Alabama, you look at a team that had head coaches on a carousel for the last three or four seasons, but they've got a facility now. I mean, Papa Nick has bought them a facility. They're not second to none when it comes to facilities in the SEC. Now, Missouri's got a ways to go. Tennessee, I think, could use a facelift, and they probably will soon. Kentucky's got a new stadium coming online. Duty Noble, a legendary place in its own right, they've got a facelift that's going to modernize it. And then Baum Stadium. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's very difficult to go on the road in the SEC because not only is there tons of talent based on scholarship restrictions and roster limitations, but you also have a ton of great talent that are going to find their way somewhere to the top program. And now you've got facilities, you've got coaching office, you've got weight room. Everybody's got everything. And now I think that's what separates those great coaches from the not great coaches. And that's why LSU is extremely lucky to have Coach Paul Menary. Because to me, moving forward in this league, the way this baseball conference has grown, that's going to make the difference. Players, obviously, and coaches. Because everybody's almost equal everywhere else.
Yeah, no doubt. D1 projections, D1 baseball, the projections, 11 of the 14 schools in the SEC will be in regional action, including LSU. So there you go. I mean, facilities, player, I mean, 11 of 14. That's pretty remarkable when you think about it. All right, let's wrap up, Chris, with this. It's LSU and Auburn. As you mentioned, lots of things still on the line on this. What do we know about the other Tigers?
Well, they're pretty good. I mean, there are like a lot of teams in the SEC this year. I mean, outside of Florida, there's not been a lot of success for conference teams on the road. You know, I think Auburn's got an incredible home record. They've done okay on the road, but they haven't been dominant. You can look at a number of teams. I mean, LSU just pointed out they've won every series at home in conference, and they get to win one on the road. The list goes on and on. So they're going to be a tough team at home. You know, everybody was wanting to find out yesterday whether or not Casey Mize would be moved up to game one starter because last week, where they got swept by Ole Miss and Oxford, they kept him on the regular rotation, giving him regular days of rest. He pitched on a Friday, even though the series started on Thursday. Well, they didn't meet with the media yesterday, but as it turned out, right now, the plan is Casey Mize to stay on that Friday rotation. He'll be in game two. So, it's big, I think, for Zach Hess tonight. It's been all good. It's been good all season long. He hasn't had his best stuff at night, but he's given the team a chance, should their offense come around, to be in the ballgame. He needs a dominant performance, I think, because there needs to be no doubt. Now, at the same time, this lineup, who has certainly been hitting well, highlighted by Daniel Cabrera, they've got to do their part well. But they've got to set the tone, Zach Hess tonight, the offense tonight, and then see what happens against the best pitcher in college baseball in Casey Mize on Friday. And then much like LSU, there's not a big determination who Auburn will throw in game three. So question marks for LSU, but basically when it comes to the pitching staff outside of night one and night two, question marks for Auburn. So I think the tone can be set on the road that the Tigers of LSU are ready to play if they can come out on all cylinders tonight in game one.
All right, thank you for your time. 6 p.m. LSU and Auburn. That is the voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers, at LSU Tigers Voice, the way to follow him over on Twitter. Chris, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Anytime. Thank you.
Yep, for sure. We'll take the quick break. We come back. Interesting tweets coming out of San Francisco. Reuben Foster, remember his girlfriend, and they're trying to, well, not trying to, did they prosecute him or not? The 49ers said, look, if he gets convicted of three felony charges on him, he's done. They're going to cut him. She apparently is testifying right now that she's made all this up. I'm going to read some of the tweets that come out of it. It's pretty interesting, to say the least. Sports Hangover continues next on ESPN New Orleans. All right, so San Jose is the scene or the place where Reuben Foster has arrived in a courtroom for a preliminary hearing on domestic violence charges. Now, the judge is set to determine whether there's enough evidence with a now recanting accuser to proceed with a trial that would start early July, is what the news is saying there. Now, Cam Inman with the paper over there, he's a 49ers reporter, actually, in the Bay Area, is tweeting from the courtroom what's happening now with his ex-girlfriend. And so Reuben Foster is there. The DA is there. And he tweets some of the, I guess, things that the ex-girlfriend is now saying. Among those, said Reuben Foster's accuser just gave extensive testimony, says he did not hit her once, and that actually she struck him with anger. And here's the quote. I was threatening Reuben that I was going to bleep up his career. She admitted calling 911 three times because, quote, I wanted to be extra. I wanted him to go down. I was upset. More. Alyssa Ennis is the lady who's now crying on the stand, per Cam, and recounts how he told her during the breakup, I can't do it anymore. All this apparently is because he broke up with her. Ennis then testified, I told him I'm going to bleep your bleep up and make sure you don't have a job tomorrow. Then she goes on and says it was a money scheme. I didn't want it to get this far into the news. It was about money. She fled home to Louisiana after Foster was arrested on February 11th, and she took with her Foster's money and jewelry, in which was in a safe deposit box. She continues to testify now, crying about the breakup, saying, I was lying about a lot of stuff. While this is going on, the reporter tweets that Reuben Foster is sitting in a chair between his attorney and the detective. Reuben's left hand on his chin, right hand on the pen, tapping the notepad and right leg, tapping floor under the desk. And she also says she never spoke to the 49ers about this. So they took a recess, and now we're waiting for Reuben Foster's attorney to cross-examine her. You know, it's one of the things that's interesting about this is, I think there's some lessons to be learned in a lot of, who's telling the truth? Right? She's coming out now. Now, she, by her doing this, she's in trouble. By her saying she lied about all of this. And a lot of times players have come out and they've had to go through this. A lot of times it makes the news. A lot of times it doesn't make the news, in which you have situations where people that they hook up with, date, are in a relationship with, that happens. You know, it's interesting because I want to say it's actually in part of like the rookie symposium, how to handle and be and understand there's going to be people, not just people that you date but friends that see you as a target, or if things don't go well, feel that since you have money, could be a target. Now, again, it's going to be interesting in that whether or not you have a situation here where the DA continues to go in, because again, the fact that he hit her is just one of the felony charges. It's an assault weapon charge and some other charges. There's three felony charges overall. So we'll keep an eye on that and just kind of see where that continues to go. So have you been paying attention to the Warriors and their postseason run? And a lot of people have been using the phrase, the Hampton Five, right? And all this goes back to, they went and met in the Hamptons to try to recruit Kevin Durant. I've always said this. You can call Draymond Green a lot of things because, again, if he's not on your team, he's the guy you easily can target and dislike, right? I'm not going to use the word hate. It's a strong word. You dislike him. If he's on your team, You love him, right? He's not stupid, though. My man lands the Hampton 5 trademark. That's right. He went out and got it trademarked. Yep. Went and got it trademarked. Warriors forward Draymond Green landed the trademark for Hampton 5. This is, of course, the nickname when teammates Green, Steph Curry, Andre Iguodala, Klay Thompson all flew out to the Hamptons 2 summers ago to recruit Kevin Durant. And after they joined, they won that championship. And now a lot of people, you know, they continue to do it. You watch it on TNT. There's, you know, a mock photo photoshopped of their heads on people in like sailor suits or attire by a boat, you know, in the Hamptons. Another one, they're fishing. It's all fun and games. Well, here's the problem now. If you use it, bling, bling, Draymond Green. The trademark for the Hampton 5 was filed in 2017 by Money 23 Enterprises and applies to everything from apparel to sports drinks to phone cases and comic books. Draymond Green. That's smart. Join the intern. You got to come up with a phrase that we can coin that we can make some money off. That's your homework. I'm going to ask Brian and Elise to come up with something like that. See, the Elgato Negro thing doesn't work. Because, again, that is completely a mischaracterized, made-up thing by Ty Graffanini. I do not...
Or the turd.
Bring... No, the turd's not going to be a trademark. That refers to the... No, that's not what's going on. What is it? Phone cases, apparel, sports drinks, and comic books. That's not happening. Anyway, it's what it is. The Hampton 5. Two other quick things I want to pass along that it's kind of funny here that's going on. So Nick Saban, a lot of people in the national news yesterday thought it was petty that he kind of verbally put UCF in its place, saying, you know, people that sort of, because UCF says they're national champ. Like, they gave players rings. They had a parade in Disney World. You know, they have it in their stadium. It says 2017 national champions. Like, they've just proclaimed themselves national champions. And Nick Saban says, you know, people that kind of self-proclaim themselves things are, not a lot of people think highly of them. Well, what's funny is, apparently now, you have Scott Frost, who left UCF, by the way, to go to Nebraska, right? To be the head coach there. Frost says, well, you know, Alabama claims one or two national titles that aren't legit either. So now both coaches are going back and forth as to what's legit and what's not legit. Frost telling KETV, Alabama probably has at least one or two national championships they claim that weren't necessarily recognized by everybody. UCF was 13-0 last year before he took that Nebraska job. But yeah, Nick Saban told USA Today, self-proclaimed is not the same as actually earning it. He said, we've only had one undefeated team, and that is really hard to do, so I have a tremendous amount of respect for their team and what they were able to accomplish, and they can make every claim that they should have been in the playoff. I get that, but we have a system, and it's not fair to the people who went through the system and earned their way playing really, really good teams. I mean, really good teams and really tough teams. It's not quite fair to them for somebody else to just decide to claim a national championship. So, Jordan, just go ahead and claim a national championship. Why not?
I'm still waiting on my statue to be built, Gus.
You want a statue based on what?
On my national championship.
That's all the time we have for Jordan the intern. But, no, it's crazy. Now you have both coaches kind of going back and forth at it. And in the paper, too. There you go. By the way, Alabama and Texas agreeing to play a home-and-home series in 2022 and 2023. The first one will be in Austin. The next one will be in Tuscaloosa in 2023. One in Austin will be September 10th in 2022. Just around the corner. Just around the corner. Ah, yes. Claiming what shouldn't be claimed yet is claimed. Hour two, we'll focus a little bit more on college baseball. Matt Reiser will lead off next hour as the head coach of the Southeastern Lions. Big series of just two games against 20th-ranked Houston. We'll tell you why when we come back. Bryant Johnson, 145. Miney Pepis from UNO, 130. Of course, Bryant with the Colonels. 205, Joe Christofek, you horse racing fans. He's coming up at 205 to preview the Preakness. And head coach Kenny Farrell of the Jesters at 230. It's the Sports Hangover. Hour one was brought to you by the King Firm. You're listening to ESPN New Orleans.